Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, January 10th, 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry back again. Hi, Charlotte.
Yes, hello. Sorry, I'm here again.
Oh, never apologize. We have to have you back because there's an entire chance that our other panelists may be wrong, and how else would he find out? Brian Chaffin is with us today. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Now, I want to start today with a PSA of sorts. We've seen this occasionally where Apple has offered an opportunity when there's a disaster somewhere in the world. Apple has offered an opportunity for you to donate through the iTunes store. And you can do that now for the Australian bushfires. And if you go to your devices, it's the iTunes store. It's not the App Store. It's where you buy music and movies and things. You can go there and tap on, there's a little button as the series of buttons through the middle that says you can donate to relief. The money goes to the Red Cross. There is no 30% Apple tax on these donations. And it's very easy. It just uses whatever your payment method is that's attached to your account, and you can go from $5 to $200, and all that money goes directly to the Red Cross in order to help with bushfire relief. So if you're interested in that, that's a thing that you can do, and it's very easy. As our friend John Martellaro mentioned in the morning meeting, he mentioned that it's very convenient, it's very safe. You get a receipt that pops up in your email, and you know, it's a very secure transaction and all of that. So all of those make it very, very easy for you to donate money over there. And that's a thing that maybe you should consider doing. So we've got the PSA out of the way. Now we're going to start with Charlotte. And Charlotte has thoughts on Apple's current change in trade-ins.
Change? It's a taking a hacksaw to them. I mean, Apple has, just a bit of background, Apple has overnight slashed the trade-in values it's offering for a number of products. The most notable one was the iPhone XS Max, which went from, it lost $100, the trade-in value, basically. Yeah, it went from $600 to $500 overnight. The iMac Pro is quite similar. It went from 4240 to 4150. So there's a lot. There's some other ones. Some of them are not so dramatic. Some are just like $10 or whatever. But, you know, the iPhone XS and XS Max are popular devices that people are likely to trade in. And there's been a big reduction in the trade-in values. I can't get my head around this decision from Apple. This is a company that has more money than it'll ever need. Like, it can't just be that it's going to earn more money.
Right.
Well, sorry. That must be the logic, but it doesn't make any sense, because actually what Apple needs to do is keep making people buy more products. And the better the trade-in value, the more products people buy. That's right. That's my trade-in logic. It wants people to buy its products. It wants people to use its services on its products. And one of the easiest ways to convince people to do that is to have significant, meaningful trade-in values. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the trade-in values are nothing, but they're less than they were on some devices.
Yeah, and especially a year-old phone, it seems like that.
Right. Come on, guys.
Should be a little bit better, yeah. Partly because the other piece of this is not just encouraging people to buy, and one of the ways you encourage people to buy is by getting a really good deal on the new thing by trading in the old thing, but also because when these devices get traded in, like, that's also environmental. It's not going in a landfill,
right,
or anything like that. So, and you know, Apple touts that a lot, and so, you know, it's kind of environmental that it's a little less money that they have to maintain, you know, that has to help too, right? I'm kidding. So I wonder what is causing this, particularly on the newer devices. Like, I could see where maybe you don't get as much money for trading in an iPhone 6S. I can see why maybe that's not getting the money that it used to. But for a 10S Max to not even trade in for 50% of what it was when it's just over a year old, like, to me, that sounds very odd. How about you, Brian?
Enter Chaffin's Razor. Chaffin's Razor says that when something seems insane or doesn't make sense, there is missing information. It's either missing information from the observer or missing information from the person who is speaking or acting in a way that appears insane to the observer.
Yes.
Apple is a data-driven company. Mm-hmm. Apple makes its decisions, a whole lot of its decisions, based on data. To the thing that is apparently and obvious to both of you is that data is backing up this decision. To wit, they're not getting as much for the 10S Maxes on the resale market, or there are simply more 10S Maxes being traded in than can be sold.
Okay.
You know, end of story. And it's probably the case for all of them. And the amount that is being traded in is not going to be the difference between someone trading something in and it going to the landfill. I mean, that's frankly nonsense.
I totally appreciate your point about it being data driven. That's you're totally right. That's indisputable. But also I personally think you need to look a little bit beyond the data. I know that might be a bit blasphemous, but I kind of think with something like this, Apple needs to think, we're trying to get people into our services. We want to keep the iPhone sales numbers up. They took a dip with the iPhone 10. They're massively high now with the iPhone 11. It's a hugely popular device. How do we keep the biggest problem? One of the only real problems Apple has faced, as I understand it, I'm sure Brian will correct me, is that people are upgrading less regularly, particularly phones. Mm-hmm. One of the things that encourages people to upgrade fairly regularly is the trade-in prices. Mm-hmm. Why would you reduce something like that, you know, $400 for...
That they changed this, Charlotte, because they believe that they can achieve the results they want with the new figures.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. It seems to me like, you know, as a way of... I'm sure that's right, but I feel like customers need to be treated a little bit better, and these are very expensive devices, and one of the things that encourages people to do them, I keep saying it, is competitive, high-level trade-in prices. Yeah, Apple still makes bucket loads of money.
We're almost 5 months into... what do we have? It's end of September, right? So end of October, November, December. Okay, so we're almost 4 months into the release of the 11. Mm-hmm. The previous generation just has less value.
That's true. I mean,
that's a fair point as well. But even if it does have a bit less value, but you still want to keep encouraging people. $500 or $600, that's not an insignificant difference to people.
I think the other piece of this is that ratcheting down the trade-in value when the resale value, like if I went and listed, if I had an iPhone XS and I decided that I just wanted to go sell it online somewhere, Craigslist or eBay or something, I could get more money for it than what Apple is going to give me. That's always been the case no matter what Apple's trade-in values were. Period. Sure. End of story. However, then I have to find someone to buy it. I have to hope that my auction gets bid on. I have to box it up and sell it. Or I can take it to the Apple store, hand it to them, and walk out with my new phone all at once. And for a lot of people, I think that's probably worth the price hit when those prices are a little bit closer together. So
the convenience of it is mm-hmm. phenomenal. I had right. it with when I bought the Mac Mini and I handed in my old Mac Pro. Mm-hmm. First of all, I was astounded at the value they gave me on a you know, nearly 10-year-old machine, mm-hmm. 8-year-old machine. No, 9 years old, probably 8.5, 9 years old. And I was like, that also engendered some goodwill, I have to say. As silly as that sounds, because I know we're dealing with a crude, you know, it's a consumer company, right? It's there to make money. I get that. But it does engender goodwill. Am I more or less likely to buy an Apple product in the future when I know I can get good trading values? Obviously more. It left me, the whole thing left me feeling like I'd had a good experience with Apple and the Apple store. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that should be taken for granted either.
I would argue, Charlotte, that the number of people that will even know that there is less trading value are, I mean, it's the blogosphere. That's a fair point.
I had
some people that read us, and it's not only not everyone, it's not a big percentage of the population.
No,
so
of course.
Are still that feel good feeling.
Brian, you're saying that not everybody reads MacObserver.com?
They do.
It's true.
But the point is, Brian, even if you don't know what it was before, and even if you haven't read my very excellent in-depth article laying out all the different prices on this, you still know if you think you're getting good money or not so good money. You like, we all instinctively have a value on things, right? And we know. And maybe Apple has calculated that once people have just gone into the store and committed they're going to buy an expensive Apple device, they feel as good about getting $500 as they do about getting $600. Mm. Maybe.
That's probably the case.
Yeah,
like I think that
extra $100 probably makes you feel a little bit better, and like I say, feeling a little bit more inclined to Apple might make you go buy another accessory. Who knows?
Right. That extra $100 could be a nicer case, or you know, like, and still come out ahead, things like that. And I feel like there's
totally
something to that. So yeah, it's interesting to me that they're cutting this. I don't know. The thing that I don't know is if this happens every year, like if every January, February we get a hit in those trade-in prices. I don't know. I did think it was interesting that this was noted, and I looked a couple of other places that had mentioned it, and I didn't see where they had said, like, here we go, it's the new year, and now that new iPhone fever has officially worn off, like, Apple's ratcheted down the trade-in rates or anything like that. Like, I haven't seen anything like that that makes it sound like this is common, which is part of why it stood out to me as a thing that we should discuss. So, I know, like, I had an iPhone 8.
Also, because I was cross about it, that's why you wanted to discuss it.
Well, that's the reason we are talking about it, but part of why it caught my eye in the first place was because I wasn't seeing any discussion of this. Like, I have an iPhone 8, and I'm certainly not going to trade it in for $170. Like, I'm sure I can redeploy it for something else, and because that's not enough. Like, because I said, if I wanted to sell it directly, I could definitely get more.
So that's actually a very good point, Kelly, because if it's not a huge amount, if there's a point where people go, do you know what? I might as well keep this in my cupboard for an emergency. Mm-hmm. And which has the kind of, and then what happens is eventually it just ends up in the bin, right?
Right, which was where I was headed, Brian, with, I'm not saying like, oh, you're not going to give me enough for my trade-in, it's going straight, I'm going to go home and throw it in the garbage. Like, that's not what I was saying.
But $100 isn't that mark. It's not going to be that mark for very many people at all, if anyone. Yeah. I mean, if we were talking about 600 down to one, and mind you, by the way, I get the idea that Apple has plenty of money. I'm confident that economics and math are driving this mm-hmm. decision.
But I do.
But you need to look beyond that sometimes.
Yeah. And I think the part that's getting missed here is, like I said, like, I would trade in my iPhone for store credit toward a future thing someday, and that would be fine. But that doesn't seem like enough for me to have to bother with. And the reason, and that's why, that's the part that I wonder if Apple is considering, because the stuff that you trade in that they can't do anything with, they will recycle. Like, you know, if they can't do anything with that 6S that you took into them in order to get your new phone, like, they're not going to throw it in the bin either. They're going to, you know, they're not going to just look at it. Oh, Bennett, they're going to give it to that machine. Daisy, I think was her name, that they have that dismantled all the stuff and turns it back into the useful pieces so they can be recycled better. And that's the part that I wonder about. With that kind of stuff is like, I have an iPhone 7. It's not worth $100 for me to get it traded in. So I'm just going to keep it. It's going to sit in the cabinet until it falls off the list entirely. You can't even install the, you know, last year's version of iOS on it. And I come across this phone, I might as well just chuck it. And that's the thing that I'm thinking way ahead about. And data doesn't bear any of that out. Like it does.
You have no data to support this being an issue either.
That's true, but I do think it's possible because I do know people who have done that. Like, I just found this iPhone 5 that I can't do anything with, you know, found it in the drawer instead of trading it in.
And to be fair, Brian, you haven't seen the data that we assume Apple is using. I think it's fair to assume that they are, but we haven't seen it.
Yeah. So that's it's interesting to see. We look forward to your letters. Are you a person who keeps a recent iPhone in a drawer for emergency purposes? Are you excited to trade things in regardless of what the value is? Let us know. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can email observations@macobserver.com like Lauren did yesterday. Hi, Lauren. And you can also leave comments in the show notes. The other thing we want to talk about today is something Brian can tell us about, and that is this new attack that is malware for Macs that comes from cryptocurrency services. I'm probably getting that wrong.
Indirectly. It comes from North Korea.
Okay.
So North Korea is using fake cryptocurrency trading software to steal cryptocurrency.
Okay.
Kapersky is the one that talked about this. Actually, it turns out there were several announcements. This is the sequel to Operation Apple Juice, and Apple Juice is spelled APPLEJEUS. So this is coming out of the North Korean hacking group Lazarus. Very, very active hacking group. North Korea has been very, very active in stealing cryptocurrency to, you know, fund North Korea in the face of crippling sanctions for quite a while. They've stolen billions, is my understanding. They're using, you know, schemes and trickery and fakery and Telegram groups and, you know, all kinds of places to steal people's cryptocurrency. And in general, I would, and this, by the way, this malware is affecting Macs and Windows both, and it is coming, I think, on the Mac. Let me see if I actually am going to get this right. There, they came up with a couple of fake trading names, JMTT Trading or JMT Trading, and I don't know, some other company. The bottom line though is, always, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is, and that's especially going with the Telegram groups. And don't install cryptocurrency trading software without doing a lot of due diligence. Like, really find out who is behind the software before you go and install it on your, you know, on any of your devices. Mm-hmm. This is malware. You know, this isn't a virus or anything like that. This is something that people are choosing to install on their systems, and then they end up losing their cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm. And this falls in nicely with the kind of stuff that we generally talk about. So hello and welcome to Security Friday on Daily Observations, where it like some vigilance, some basic, attention to be paid, like when you go to install something new, whether it's a cryptocurrency thing or not, like there's still less legitimate software available from people who have less than savory intentions about what it's going to do once it's installed on your computer. So this is the kind of stuff that like this particular attack vector is not everybody, because not everybody is is running something cryptocurrency related. We get that. But, and, you know, not everybody's trading cryptocurrency, but also there's, you know, utilities that are supposed to clean your memory or optimize your hard drive or different kinds of stuff like that, that people will install and not think much about. And you kind of have to stop and think about them. And especially when it comes to something like, you know, we know these are people from North Korea that are doing this as a way to steal money from other people. So it's a thing that, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like an ounce of awareness can go a long way. So if you see JMT trading on here and you kind of, you know, like, hopefully that'll set off some alarm bells and maybe it won't end up installed. So
the Windows version was posing as Union Crypto Trader.
Okay. Interesting. So I think that's pretty much going to do it for today. So I want to thank both of you for joining us. Like I said, you can always get a hold of us at observations@macobserver.com. Leave comments in the show notes or get us at TMO Daily on Twitter. Thank you both for being here today. Charlotte, thank you for dropping by.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Brian, as always, thank you for being here to explain things in the crypto world to us.
Of course. Happy to do it. Thanks for having us. Always good to be here.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. I hope you have a really good weekend. And during all of it, you be excellent to each other.